You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Chicago White Sox edition. I am Anthony Cashman. I am joined once again by Scott Merkin. Merk, the White Sox, geez, they lost 8 straight before winning 2 straight against a quality Rangers team over the weekend, but they've scored 3 or less in 8 straight as we record this. It's just a kind of the same old story there with that offense.
Yeah, but they're red hot right now because they've won 2 in a row. So, yeah, you got to look at the cup half full there. Yeah, you start to think maybe a few things. It's a weird team because we've thought this before, that we thought things would turn around. For instance, Melky Cabrera had 5 hits, career-high 5 hits, in Sunday's game against the Rangers. So you think, okay, maybe he's turning the corner because he's a much better hitter in all facets than what he's shown this year. But only time will tell on that. You know, they're not getting it. This team has stayed in almost a, you know, lineup-wide slump from the beginning of the season. It's really kind of befuddling. And I talked to Todd Steverson, the hitting coach, who's very well thought of in the organization. I don't see any kind of change coming there anytime in the near future. And he just said they really just have to stay after it. You know, it hurts him that they're doing so poorly, but they just got to keep working and try and get out of this stuff. You know, I mean, they're really, aside from Abreu, there's no one on that team who has been, even Avi Garcia, who started off strong, has been slumping lately. So there's no one who's been consistent from start to now for the White Sox offense.
Melky, in particular, like you said, I mean, the track record was way better than what we've seen to date. What is he saying about the way his season has gone and what's been different for him, or what changes might be in store? I know he watches, he's the kind of guy who watches a lot of old video of himself, right, from successful times. What's the difference in his opinion?
Yeah, he's been better since he started doing that. He said he watched video of when he was, you know, hit the ball well for Toronto and even San Francisco in the past. And I think he said mainly Toronto he was focused on. And he changed his hands a little bit. I believe he said he raised his hands a bit. And, you know, it's come around. I think the thing that's surprising for Melky is just such, you know, the lack of extra base power. I haven't looked at it in the last day or so, but I think he may have 9 or 10 extra base hits for the year and just one home run. Granted, that home run tied a game off Detroit, so at least he made it count. But, you know, he's got no extra base power to go with the sort of lack of average, which is climbing a little bit. So he really hasn't given any reason aside from that, you know, that it's just not clicking for him, especially right-handed. He was, I think, at 1.5 for 51 this year, hitting from the right-handed side, which is, you know, kind of unusual for him. He's about a 275 career hitter in that area. So again, it's not so much trying to deeply analyze why this isn't working. It's more that you got to just keep putting the work in and hope that the, you know, the back of the baseball card starts to even out where these guys are from now. But as Rick Hahn said the other day, you know, the White Sox general manager, when he met with the media, you know, eventually you got to stop looking at the back of the baseball card and see results on the field. You know, you can't go 130 games in and say, well, you know, he's a 275 career hitter, and even though he's hitting 230, we know he's going to get back up there. You got to start doing it at this point.
Yeah, we're at a point in the season where your MLB.com stats page matters more than your baseball card. Chris Sale, though, geez, amazing run. He struck out at least 12 in 5 straight starts. Never been done before. What's the key there, Mr. Merk?
Six straight double-digit starts, I believe, and strikeouts. Yeah, his MLB.com stat page and his baseball card look pretty darn good right now, I'd say. The key for Chris Sale is he's really good. I don't know what else to analyze past that. No, in all honesty, he's just such a complete pitcher now, and he's such a complete player overall. Just kind of, I talked about this before with you, Anthony, just a kind of a leader, even though he's, you know, people joke, and somewhat joke, but we're partially serious about how when Konerko retired, it went from Paul Konerko's team to Chris Sale's team, and Chris Sale laughed at that because he always points out that he plays every 5 days, you know, so it's kind of hard to have a team be your team. But just the way he performs on the field, and then after the game Friday when someone questioned him about the offense and asked if he needs to throw a shutout, and Sale said, don't even go there, you know, basically, if you think for a second I'm going to rip my teammates, that isn't happening, you know. So, you know, they're in it together. But, I mean, he has that wipeout slider, but he knows when to pull back on that. He knows when to feature it a little more. He's got that second gear now, which Robin Ventura has talked about, that, you know, you see Randy Johnson and Pedro Martinez have, that when it's a close game in the seventh inning, he can reach back and get a little bit extra. But he's just hitting every spot, mixing pitches well. He has a great working relationship with Tyler Flowers. He's a couple of times talked to me about how great, you know, he feels throwing the ball. He's a little like, I've compared him to Mark Burley with like 1,000 times better stuff. You know, he goes out there and he works quick. Burley always trusted his catcher. You rarely see Mark Burley shake up a catcher because he knows, you know, they know the game plan. Chris actually had a funny quote when I was talking to him recently where he was praising Tyler for going over the game film and making the charts and everything else about, you know, who hits what. And he said, he kind of said to me, I don't know if he meant it this way, but he said, you know, I don't go over game film. I don't read scouting reports. I just go out there and pitch and trust Tyler. So, again, that reinforces how darn good Chris Sale is, that he's not even, you know, he's doing his work in between starts, obviously. He's doing a lot of work and a lot of throwing. But Chris is not a big scouting report video guy. He just kind of goes out there and lets the talent and trust take over. And, I mean, he, you know, there was a time, I want to say May 12th, May 8th, somewhere in there, where the ERA was 5.59. And last I looked, I think it's 2.74 now. And I believe he's like third in baseball in strikeouts. And that's only because Max Scherzer has been beyond inhuman his last two starts. So, you know, how quickly things change when you put together a 7 or 8 start stretch like he has.
Yeah, he's had a good 6 weeks or so. Carlos Rodon had a roller coaster week, a brutal outing in the Berg, followed by a very solid start against the Rangers. But in general, following Sale and that rotation has to be a benefit to young Mr. Rodon, no?
What is, you know, one thing people have mentioned about Rodon since spring training is that he really has taken it all in. You know, he's a guy who comes with a great pedigree, first-round pick, a player that, you know, a lot of teams thought would help a major league team, as you know, right after he was drafted last year, that he was ready to pitch in the big leagues not too far after that. Yet he's just kind of, I don't want to say stay humble because he's, you know, that's a given, but he's kind of stayed in the background. You know, he's just watching. He's taking everything in. He's watching how veteran hitters approach the game. He's watching how veteran pitchers approach. But being that they're both lefties and, you know, somewhat similar styles, you know, Rodon is working on that changeup like Chris Sale did when he first started. Now, Chris Sale was in the bullpen, so it's a little different. But, you know, he's working on adding that to the mix, too. And what just watching Sale attack certain hitters, especially when they're pitching in the same series, which won't happen this time around, but really helps him. Really, you know, it's kind of a lesson in his mind as to, okay, I saw what Chris did here. Maybe I can go after it that way, too. So, yeah, and, you know, they talk quite a bit. He talks, you know, with John Danks a lot. He's kind of a sponge in that clubhouse, kind of soaking it all in and trying to get himself better every day.
Mark, I want to ask you about Zach Putnam, who's a somewhat unheralded member of the bullpen, and obviously they went out and added some arms to that pen after a rough year from a relief standpoint last year. But Putnam had a terrific year last year, and then he had a bad start to this season. But going back to May 7th, he's got an ERA just north of 1. Opponents are hitting .137 off of him in that span. So what's clicked for Mr. Putnam?
Can we talk about the college where he pitched to? Is that possible?
You can mention that. I'm just kind of teeing you up there, Mark.
Okay, yeah. He is from Ann Arbor and pitched at a little school named the University of Michigan there too. But
Does he like the Eagles, though? Does he listen to the Eagles? That's what I want to know.
We have not discussed. We have not gotten to the Eagles. We did have a long talk about Michigan softball when they were in the World Series, and both were
I'm sure that was scintillating.
Yeah, it was a little deflating, yeah. But, you know, Zach had a lot of little minor things, like he had a back issue in spring training for a little bit. He had the flu for a while. And then he had something with his thumb where he, like, had part of the nail removed. So I think it was just kind of getting in a groove for Zach. And people forget that he was arguably, you know, Jake Patricia got a great year last year, too. And in the mix of a bad bullpen, Zach was probably as consistent as any reliever they had on the team. And not just in a bad bullpen. He had a really good year last year. You know, he makes great usage of that split finger that he has, and I think just a really good pitcher. And that's always been the thing that's in my mind, you know, until they dipped a little bit here, kept me thinking, well, this team's got a shot because you have that bullpen in place, and that's a key factor. You know, if you get a lead, for the most part, I know David Robertson had a blown save Friday after Sale struck out 14, but that's going to happen. But you know that you can give it off to the bullpen, and even if it's like with Rodon Saturday, you know, 7th to 8th at 9th, you have the arms. You have Patricia, Putnam, and Duke to kind of work the setup innings, and then a pretty surefire closer in David Robertson. So, you know, you keep thinking, well, these are good offensive players, so that's eventually going to click. And then once it does, you have the starting pitching and you have the bullpen. Now the only problem for the White Sox is, you know, are they too far back to really make a run of it? We'll see. You know, I mean, they lost 8 in a row. Maybe they can win 15 of 17 or 15 of 18. But the problem with them is, you know, not even the 10 behind Kansas City or they're 7 out of the wild card. There's a number of teams in front of them now that they have to jump. But, yeah, Putnam is a great addition for them. He's a great find. And, you know, he had a really good spring training 2 years ago and then kind of worked his way into the major league bullpen. And, like I said, really deepens that staff and really gives, you know, shortens the game. But starters need to do that with the guys they have down there.
Merck, one last thing. Am I wrong? Did you have a rare day off on Sunday?
I did. I celebrated Father's Day with my great dad, who's going to be 86 on July 2nd. And
wow.
Of course,
that's time well spent, but you missed the cup. You missed the Stanley Cup.
First home game I missed this year, and the Stanley Cup is there. How about that? Go figure.
Unbelievable. I want to know if you tried to drink Pepsi out of the cup and maybe spilled.
Diet Pepsi. Let's go there. If I'm going to drink unhealthy, at least let it be Diet Pepsi. But I did get a picture with the cup, and there's a great moment. I'm pretty sure it was after the 2010. Yeah, it was after 2010 when the Hawks won the first cup. They brought the cup to Wrigley for a Sunday night game between the Cubs and White Sox, and all the Hawks players who were there took a picture on the field with all the Cubs and the Sox. A really, really cool moment. And then they brought the cup up to the press box, put it like in a separate room, and we just kind of lined up and took pictures of it. It was kind of weird looking, but it shows you the meaning of the cup. But yeah, I'm a little sad. I wouldn't have had to even wait in line. You know, there wasn't all that many media members there, and I missed my opportunity. My devotion to family caused me to miss my opportunity.
Well, you know, they're on a pace now. In a couple of years, they'll win it again, and they'll bring it back around. So
there you go.
Think,
so I can get it then. I'm sure it'll be around the city 11 more times in the next 2 weeks where I can find it somewhere.
Yeah, it's gonna make the rounds. It usually does. I want to thank Scott Merkin for joining us, and thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Chicago White Sox edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.